QST from the American Radio Relay League, ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio. This is the ARRL Aries Audio E-Letter for November 21st, 2012. The Aries Audio E-Letter Report is a voice version of the Aries E-Letter, which is compiled and written by Rick Palm, K1CE. The Aries E-Letter is available online at arrl.org/ares-el, or you may listen to the audio version at arrl.org/ares-e-letter-audio-version. I'm Tony Riggs, W1FHN, reporting from Lanham, Maryland, and my script editor is Al Brown, KZ3AB, in Laurel, Maryland. In this issue, we have for you Superstorm Sandy Hot Wash, Georgia Aries Team supports National Guard COMEX, Tennessee Amateur Radio Club participates in Exercise Winter Storm 2012, New England Forest Rally 2012, Challenging and Rewarding, ARRL Public Service Emergency Communications Training Program Changes, Letters on Recruitment Challenges, Florida Aries Group supports Great Floridian Triathlon, Training Ops, and K1CE for a final. Now the news. Superstorm Sandy Hot Wash. Amateur radio operators who wanted to assist those sections affected by Hurricane Sandy were advised not to self-deploy. ARRL Emergency Preparedness Manager Mike Corey, KI1U, explained, "There are many ARRL sections involved in the impact area, and each has different requirements on how they locate, credential, and deploy volunteers. If a need for manpower is identified that cannot be met locally or in the section, the section leadership may contact other sections for assistance. If the need is still not met, section leadership may then contact ARRL headquarters for assistance. ARRL headquarters sent ham aid radios and equipment in response to requests, and Mr. Corey was active on major disaster response nets from Connecticut. The following are summary after-action reports received by your editor, K1CE, by state or section. Many sections that were active during the storm are not represented here, as their leadership are still gathering reports from their operators for compilation and forwarding to ARRL. Further reports are welcomed by your editor at k1ce@arrl.org, and will be considered for future issues. The reporters represented below are to be commended for their efforts and are due the thanks of a grateful amateur radio community and the public at large. Eastern and Western Massachusetts. Rob Macedo, KD1CY, the Eastern Massachusetts Section Emergency Coordinator, reported, "Eastern Massachusetts Aries was put on standby on Friday evening, October 26, 2012, to obtain availability of amateur radio operators for deployment at EOCs and shelters." Mr. Macedo also reported that Western Massachusetts Aries was placed on standby on Saturday evening. Eastern Massachusetts Aries activated its amateur radio command center at the town of Acushnet Emergency Management Agency and at the Clay Center Observatory, co-located at the Dexter Southfield School in Brookline, Massachusetts. This was to assure that the section would stay connected if widespread 2-meter repeater outages occurred. The City of Boston's EOC requested amateur radio support, as did the Red Cross, for several regional shelters within eastern Massachusetts. Cape Cod Aries supported several regional shelters on the Cape and had radio amateurs at several area hospitals. Operators ran net control for their district net out of the Red Cross chapter office in Hyannis under the call sign of K1PBO. The Massachusetts Emergency Management Agency Region 2 office in Bridgewater was also active, as WC1MAB, through the efforts of Region 2 RACES radio officer Mike Sparky Ledger N1YLQ, and John Miller, N1UMJ. Finally, operators at the National Weather Service office in Taunton, amateur radio Skywarn station WX1BOX, were active. Mr. Macedo and Eastern Massachusetts Ares Assistant SEC Carl Aveni, N1FY, staffed and operated WX1BOX. In Western Massachusetts, SEC John Ruggiero, N2YHK, reported that several Red Cross shelters were opened in his section. One shelter in Northampton was staffed with an amateur radio operator, but for other shelters, hams were not requested. The Worcester Emergency Communications Team ran a resource net and supported amateur radio Skywarn operations with reports of damage across Worcester County. During Hurricane Sandy, the WX1BOX team handled several hundred reports of wind damage, wind measurements, rainfall measurements, storm surge, and urban flooding reports from the heavy rainfall. Reports came through over a dozen local area VHF and UHF repeaters with liaisons, as well as through the use of the New England Echolink and IRLP. The New England IRLP and Echolink reflector system was combined and linked into the VOIP Hurricane Net IRLP. This created one large hurricane net covering from the Delmarva region into New Jersey, New York, and New England. The amateur radio station at the National Hurricane Center in Miami, WX4NHC, was also linked into this network. The damage reports and meteorological information was shared with other agencies such as the Red Cross, local and state emergency management, and the media to provide situational awareness and disaster intelligence during Sandy's impact on the region. This has become a very critical role for amateur radio in the region and is viewed as equally important to providing communications when all else fails. We'll pause now for a few seconds to allow repeaters to identify. Now we'll continue with more reports about Hurricane Sandy in Massachusetts. At the height of the storm, numerous wind gusts exceeding hurricane force, or 74 miles an hour, were recorded across southeastern New England. Wind gusts as high as 70 miles per hour were recorded across interior locations of southern New England. Two reports from Westerly, Rhode Island, of sustained winds of 64 miles per hour with a wind gust to 86 miles per hour, as well as a wind gust reported by Cape Cod Ares District Emergency Coordinator Frank O'Loughlin, WQ10, of 76 miles per hour in the Marston's Mills section of Barnstable, Massachusetts, were received by WX1BOX. This information was relayed to WX4NHC and appeared in the 5 p.m. Monday, October 29th National Hurricane Center Advisory. Power outages numbered 386,000 in Massachusetts, 122,000 in Rhode Island, and 630,000 in Connecticut. This meant over 1.1 million people were without power in southern New England at the height of Sandy's impact. Despite the fact that many people were without power, southern New England was luckier than New York City, Long Island, and New Jersey, where power outages lasted longer and affected over 3 million people. Mr. Macedo remarked, "I never thought I would say, with close to 400,000 people without power in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, that we would say we were lucky, but that is definitely the case in comparison to the other areas." Surge flooding was heaviest in southern New England. Beach erosion with sand as deep as 4 feet covered beach roads, with homes damaged and even knocked off their foundations by the storm surge in Charlestown, Rhode Island. The south coastal areas were restricted to residents only and required a pass to get into those locations. However, amateur radio operators embedded with local town emergency management and public safety teams facilitated reports on the damage from the storm surge and compiled pictures after the situation passed for the NWS Taunton Skywarn program. Lessons learned. What worked? There was significant reporting of conditions across the region from amateur radio operators, including those embedded with emergency management and other agencies, as well as APRS and CWOP weather stations. On-air operations were professional and efficient. There was a seamless transfer of information from the local to regional to national level, as seen in reports from southern New England making it into the NHC advisories by contact with the National Hurricane Center. There was strong contact with the Massachusetts Emergency Management Agency Region 2 office and emergency management agencies that were put on the air at various local cities and towns. There was good PR generated with various local TV and newspaper outlets mentioning amateur radio efforts in their publications and on-air programs. A tremendous amount of pictures and videos that were generated by many amateur radio operators and sky-worn spotters will allow for a historical guide for what Hurricane Sandy's impacts were in the region. What needs improvement? Several agencies waited until the last minute to request amateur radio operators, unlike during Hurricane Irene, when these agencies made requests up front. This may have been due to the lack of hurricane warnings issued up the coastline. This could potentially be addressed via tabletop exercises with various agencies. The number of amateur radio operators needed to create depth to do multiple shifts for a situation that is over a 24-hour period remains an issue. This will be addressed through more aggressive training programs, district ARIES meetings, and drills. And finally, getting sky-worn spotters embedded with emergency management to see storm surge areas, if safe to do so, for near real-time reporting is a goal. This is an issue that will also be coordinated with the National Weather Service in Taunton. Our thanks to Rob Macedo, KD1CY, the Eastern Massachusetts SEC, for this fine report. Eastern Massachusetts Section Manager Phil Temples, K9HI, said, quote, "Macedo and his ARIES staff did a stellar job in the planning stages. They held numerous teleconferences in the days leading up to our near brush with disaster. Our section's seamless integration of ARIES and Skywarn gave the players an excellent window into what lay ahead. And, of course, the NWS benefited greatly from our real-time weather criteria reporting via VHF and UHF repeaters tied into the IRLP, Echolink, and VOIP network." North Carolina. Janice Hopkins, KJ4JPE, the ARRL-PIO for Newport, North Carolina Skywarn Net Control, reported the Newport Skywarn was activated on Saturday, October 27th, after a conference call briefing conducted by Richard Bandy, meteorologist in charge of the Newport NWS office, with check-ins from numerous areas. ARIES operators participating in the net monitored their local repeaters, reporting flooding and damage reports. Reports came in from downeast Carteret County of storm surges more than 2 feet above high tide. Highway 70 was flooded. Bulkheads were breached, and wind gusts went up to 50 miles per hour. Rob Schonk, N4JKL, reported that his yard in Buxton was flooded with 4 to 5 feet of water. Mr. Schonk also witnessed a house sliding into the sea and 2 nearby houses leaning on each other in Rodanthe. It's time again to take a short pause for station identification. This is the ARRL ARIES e-letter for November 21st, 2012. Now we'll continue with more reports about Hurricane Sandy. Connecticut. Connecticut Section Manager Betsy Doan, K1EIC, and Section Emergency Coordinator Wayne Gronland, N1CLV, reported that 80 stations checked into the SM-SEC planning net held on Sunday night, October 28th, before the arrival of major storm effects there. Ms. Doan and Mr. Gronland briefed the group and recruited volunteers to fill gaps in operations where needed. Ms. Doan also took calls from served agencies to fill their requests. All requests were met, and problems were solved quickly by the Ares leadership pair and the entire Section Ares team. SEC Gronlund worked from the Division of Emergency Management and Homeland Security, or DEMHS, Region 4 headquarters. The SEC's leadership nets met every 2 hours on the KB-1 AEV linked repeater system. Some members of these nets were operating from their respective DEMHS region headquarters stations. All participated, giving reports of current conditions in their respective regions. Skywarn was busy with Assistant DEC for Skywarn Jim McBride, KD1LD, keeping the nets updated on conditions. Skywarn ECs coordinated activity in their respective counties, performing very well as trained. Well-known Skywarn operator Roger Jean-Favre, K1PAI, coordinated 10 weather nets for Hartford County. Craig Lang, W1MHZ, ran a net while camped out at his neighbor's home as he had to be evacuated. Assistant SEC Art Frago, AF1HS, posted alerts on the Connecticut Ares website while others kept the Ares discussion email reflector operational. In general, repeaters went down, but backup repeaters and power quickly restored communications. Operators were deployed by the Greenwich American Red Cross Office. In Stamford, operators were recently CERT-trained and were under the umbrella of the City of Stamford as they provided backup communications for the city. Led by EC John Perlstein, WB2RYV, operators were deployed to the shelters as needed and provided valuable support to the Stamford Office of Emergency Management. The town of Darien had one operator deployed for the Red Cross. In Norwalk, the shelter was staffed around the clock by Ares, with one operator also being an evacuee. In Wilton, one operator was on site at the EOC. Greater Bridgeport Amateur Radio Club operators were at their EOC. Their area had over 800 evacuees in 3 evacuation centers. Many other shelters throughout the section were supported by amateur radio operators, some of whom were also CERT-trained. EC Perlstein reported that 8 volunteers and 2 Red Cross disaster leaders, most of whom are members of the Stamford Amateur Radio Association, supported the 3 Stamford shelters, manned the city's citizen service line, and provided backup communications for the Red Cross between the shelters, the EOC, and the Darien Red Cross Chapter House. Those manning the shelters did everything from intake to cooking to support for the elderly and infirm. Those who manned the citizen service line were the city's direct communication to residents as they called for advice on evacuation. Connecticut Section Manager Doan said that Ares operators also became involved as expediters in dealing with the various problems, such as untangling a non-radio communications issue that was interfering with food deliveries to the Stamford shelters. In the aftermath of the storm, the mayor was careful to single out participants to various visiting politicians, including U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal. Both the mayor and the director of public safety made specific mention of amateur radio in thanking the various volunteer groups who helped the city of Stamford. In Region 2, Division Emergency Coordinator Douglas Sharafanowicz, WA1SFH, operated for 2 days from DEMHS Region 2 headquarters and ran nets every hour on Monday. This region was recently reorganized, and Section Manager Doan commended the DEC and his team on getting so many trained people out in the field for this storm. In eastern Connecticut, the following towns in Region 4 opened shelters that were supported by Ares and Red Cross amateur radio operators: East Lyme, New London, Groton, Stonington, Norwich, and Colchester, and the Area 4 Waterford office of the Red Cross, K K1ARC. The East Lyme Regional Shelter was opened on Sunday, October 28th by the American Red Cross, and amateur radio assistance was requested to link it to the Waterford American Red Cross headquarters. The link was established by a shelter radio, go box, and antenna that had been assembled by ARES from a Homeland Security grant. A Region 4 resource net was operational with 31 stations checking in for duty. In Region 5, DEC Dave Hyatt, K1DAV, manned the Torrington EOC. The War Memorial Shelter was supported by HAMS. Herb Comrets, N1KWV, manned the Red Cross operation in Bethel. The Region 5 resource net, run by Mr. Hyatt, had 17 towns represented in Bethel. Tom Cheslock, K1TJC, acted as a Red Cross shelter manager for 7 days and 6 nights. He and his wife Carol looked after clients, manned radios, and handled many difficult situations. Laura Vasile, KB1SOM, Bethel's health director, handled all the health decisions. Ken Wythe, KD1DD, ran shelter communications, assigning town radios to key people. Mr. Wythe reported, CERT training served the volunteers well in this long-term shelter assignment. The Stratford EOC was supported by Gary Moyer, WE1M, and section manager Doan. The pair set up EOC, VHF, and UHF radios and antennas at Bunnell High School, the Stratford shelter. The EOC and shelter were then continuously manned by additional operators. On the digital front, Assistant Section Manager Larry Buck, K1HEJ, reported that the FlaxNet packet nodes maintained connectivity. Mr. Buck said there was good use of Winlink gateways, and also 29 nodes were connecting to the W1HAD packet network as platforms for disaster response messages. NTS nets ran as scheduled, but stood by to handle only emergency record traffic to accommodate repeaters on backup power. Those at shelters supported communications functions when asked and helped out with other related tasks. Ms. Doan thanked her ARES operators, saying, "We're a team." Our thanks go out to Connecticut Section Manager Betsy Doan, K1EIC, for this report. We'll pause once again to allow repeaters to identify. This is the ARRL ARES e-letter for November 21st, 2012. We received this report on reports about ARES activity during Hurricane Sandy from Southern New Jersey. Ocean County ARES was activated and conducted status nets on the WA2RES repeater twice each day during the emergency and response phases. The Ocean County EOC requested amateur radio communications for each Red Cross and municipal shelter, which was met by Ocean County Emergency Coordinator Robert Murdoch, WX2NJ. 6 shelters were opened, but County ARES did not have enough equipment to serve all shelters, so a request was made to Southern New Jersey Section Emergency Coordinator John Zruba, K2ZA, and ARRL headquarters responded by sending 6 transceivers, power supplies, coax, and antennas to the ARES group under the HAMAID program. Mr. Murdoch went to the EOC, took possession of the equipment, and returned to his home, where he worked through the night to inventory the gear, program the transceivers, assemble antennas, and test all power supplies and coax for proper operation. There was no commercial power at his home, but his ham shack was being powered by a 9-kilowatt propane-powered emergency generator. By Thursday, November 1st, the emergency phase changed to the recovery phase, which will take a long time to complete in the 9 counties of the ARRL Southern New Jersey section. Commercial communication systems were being restored in most parts of the section, but amateur radio operations continued in Ocean and Atlantic counties under the direction of their ECs. Mr. Murdoch said the ARRL Ham Aid VHF radios worked very well. Both shoreline counties will continue to determine their long-term amateur radio needs daily, based on Red Cross sheltering plans and the state of commercial communications restoration. Mr. Zruba was also the incident commander for this event. He polled other counties in the section for mutual aid operator support for Atlantic County to relieve weary operators there. The ARRL Eastern Pennsylvania, Northern New Jersey, and Western Massachusetts sections all offered operators and ARES MAT teams. The last session of the Section Resource Net on the Southern New Jersey ARES repeater was held on Thursday morning. Thanks were given to all ARES and RACES operators who showed that planning, regular monthly tests, and dedication pay off when it comes to helping their fellow citizens in a major communication emergency. When all else fails, amateur radio works. Thanks for this report goes out to Gary Wilson, K2GW, the Assistant Section Manager for the Southern New Jersey Section. Virginia. Virginia Section Manager Carl Clements, W4CAC, reported that ARES groups in Fairfax County, Chesapeake, Portsmouth, Norfolk, and Virginia Beach staffed EOCs, and the Isle of Wight also activated. Mr. Clements added, "Most of our damage here in the Tidewater area, Norfolk, Portsmouth, Chesapeake, and the beach, was a few downed trees and power lines with minor flooding. When our folks were activated, they responded." Delaware. The ARRL Delaware Section ARES RACES was tasked with providing backup communications for the state EOC in Smyrna and each of the three individual Delaware County EOCs in Newcastle County, Dover in Kent County, and Georgetown in Sussex County. The team also provided backup communications for the city of Wilmington in Newcastle County and several small towns in Sussex County. Communications provided during the storm consisted of essential elements of information in the form of local road and weather reporting, high water, downed trees, and power outages. There was exchange of local welfare information about open shelters. Updates were communicated to the National Hurricane Center during the storm's progress. There were about 100 radio amateurs involved throughout Delaware. Section Manager Frank Filipkowski, AD3M, managed his team from the state EOC. The primary HF frequency used was 3905 kHz for the Delaware traffic net, with check-ins from each of the EOCs. HF communications were also established using Winlink, Army MARS, and Civil Air Patrol frequencies. VHF and UHF communications were maintained during the storm without power outages in most cases. Most of the traffic and messages were passed using local VHF and UHF activated nets for each county. Section Manager Filipkowski said, "Although the eye of Hurricane Sandy passed over the state of Delaware, we escaped much of the damage that was reported to areas north of us." Sussex County ARES provided emergency backup communications during Hurricane Sandy from October 28th through October 30th. ARES members furnished over 360 hours of communications support at served agency locations, as well as from their homes and mobile units. Preps. Based on the increasing potential of a damaging storm, Sussex County ARES encouraged members to check their go kits and overall readiness. As the storm continued to develop, a bulletin was issued on October 26th giving details of potential shelter and hospital activations. On October 26th and 27th, the EC attended statewide conference calls at the county EOC. Information obtained from these calls was helpful in creating the ARES plans for the Sandy response. A special pre-hurricane net was called on the evening of October 27th to answer questions and discuss assignments and operating requirements. The detailed Ares plan was issued on Sunday morning, October 28th, which included frequencies, personnel assignments, reporting requirements, and a request for additional personnel. Activations began at 12 noon on October 28th. Sussex County Ares operators deployed to several served agency locations and shelters. The operating environment was generally high gusty winds with heavy to moderate rain. Winds peaked in the late afternoon and the evening of October 29th. Nearly all traffic was tactical. Information requests from the EOC were made in this format, as were most responses. The Indian River High School Shelter Ares team used the ICS 213 message format for shelter headcount reports. They obtained shelter manager signatures on each. Practice, test, WinLink messages were exchanged between the hospitals and the EOC. We'll pause once again for repeater station identifications. This is the ARRL Ares Audio e-letter for November 21st, 2012. Now we'll continue with more reports about Hurricane Sandy from Delaware Section Manager Frank Filipkowski, AD3M. Accomplishments and lessons learned. Sussex County Ares provided communications at two shelters housing over 500 residents. For many Sussex County Ares members, this was their first opportunity to operate during an emergency, and each of them stepped up. Net discipline was greatly improved. With our training emphasis and the importance of the actual situation at hand, chatter and general comments were at a minimum. The radios that were recently installed at Nanticoke Hospital worked very well. Data communications using WinLink and WinMore Pactor, as well as voice, were available throughout the storm. The pre-net offered an opportunity to announce and discuss final plans. Permanent antennas at shelters and hospitals are essential. This has been stated after several section emergency tests, or SETs, and drills, and following Hurricane Irene. The marginal communications attained with portable J-poles and jury-rigged solutions stands in stark contrast to the success with the permanent antennas at Nanticoke Memorial Hospital. On a positive note, Ares has learned that Sussex County has procured equipment for permanent installation at five shelter facilities. At BB Medical Center, antennas have been purchased, with the next step being installation. Completion of these installations will mark a significant milestone, and it is hoped that the shelters and BB Hospital will have permanent antennas in time for the next emergency. WinLink was available at BB and Nanticoke and at the EOC, but none of the shelter operators had this capability. Ares is continuing to train and emphasize the importance of this digital mode. The goal is to have WinLink at each deployed location and served agency. The ICS 213 is a useful tool in traffic handling. During Sandy, only one site used the form in submitting shelter headcount reports. The operator obtained Red Cross shelter manager signatures on each message. We will continue to underscore the value of the 213 in our training, and at the same time emphasize the need to send messages slowly and only after direction from the Net Control Station, or NCS, to begin transmission. We must redouble our efforts to encourage members to deploy to served agencies. During Sandy, we satisfied our mission, but had the storm lingered, our deployed manning level would have been insufficient to the task. Ares leadership has identified several members who will be contacted individually and asked to deploy during the next activation. NCS and served agency operators used Form ICS 309 for communications logging. Newer members were unsure about the form, but tried their best to fill it out. Ares will conduct training on the use of ICS-309, ICS-213, and ICS-214 forms. The initial NCS operator was on duty for 12 hours. After that, with the addition of two more operators, shifts were 6 hours. This still proved to be too long, so in the future we will use 3-hour shifts so that operators do not become so fatigued. Reporting criteria need to be emphasized. We did a much better job in reporting than we did during Hurricane Irene. The EC requested a list of reportable information from the EOC, and this was generally provided by radio amateurs accordingly. A few unnecessary reports mean that we must continue to emphasize that only information requested by a served agency is to be reported. Individual operators reported radio, home generator, and TNC problems as they attempted to use their equipment during the storm. This points out the importance of regularly checking out our equipment. In summary, during the storm, we received an inquiry from the Delaware State Police asking about our ability to provide support if it became necessary. The storm concluded without our activation, but we were pleased to be considered as a potential resource. Beebe and Nanticoke hospitals were very complimentary, frequently expressing their appreciation for our support. Shelter managers were very cooperative in helping the Ares teams find operating areas that were separate from the actual shelter areas. This marked an improvement over the situation during Hurricane Irene. Based on a September meeting with Sussex County, Ares provided a listing of all deployed operators so that they could be covered under the county's insurance plan. Sussex County Ares provided 365 person-hours of communication support to our community. An additional 21 hours were dedicated to the pre-storm planning net, 13 hours to planning and coordination, including 2 meetings at the EOC, and 10 hours of after-action analysis and reporting. In total, that was 409 hours of service. Thanks to Frank Filipkowski, AD3M, the ARRL Delaware Section Manager, for this report. It's time now to allow repeater stations identifications. This is the ARRL Ares Audio E-Letter for November 21st, 2012. Here is the Hurricane Sandy Ares report from northern New York. Pete Newell, KC2WI, the Lewis County Ares Emergency Coordinator, Racy's Radio Officer for Lewis County Emergency Communicators, and AFA2CQ in Military Auxiliary Radio System MARS, wrote, 2 days after the ARRL Northern New York section set, Superstorm Sandy hit the East Coast. In most of the Adirondacks, the storm seemed almost a non-issue. We had some trees down and power outages for a short time, but nothing too serious or prolonged. However, this was not the case elsewhere, obviously. As a member of the Air Force Military Auxiliary Radio System, or Air Force MARS, I spent the better part of 3 days checked in to the USAF MARS Emergency Communications Nets and monitoring, relaying messages, or acting as net control. MARS and Ares Racy's are complementary volunteer emergency radio services, with Ares Racy's primarily supporting civilian agencies and MARS supporting the military and other federal government agencies, such as FEMA. During one of my net control shifts, we handled a message to the FAA about loss of tower lighting at a nuclear power facility, a potentially hazardous situation, especially with disaster relief aircraft in the area. The problem was observed by a mobile station in New Jersey and relayed by an HF station in Virginia to a military station in New York, who in turn contacted the FAA, which in turn issued a bulletin on the situation to warn pilots. Well, that concludes our reports on Hurricane Sandy for this month. In other news, Georgia Aries team supports National Guard COMEX. Zero Dark 30 hours comes early for anyone, but especially for civilians getting up to be part of a military communications exercise. But members of the Cobb County, Georgia Aries team, along with their counterparts from Chatham County, were up for the Saturday, November 3, 2012 National Guard COMEX with time to spare, or so it seemed, right up until net operations began. Cobb Aries Emergency Coordinator EC Ed Humphreys, N5RCK, along with his wife Dawn, KI5EV, were joined by Anthony Gato, KC0CSG, and James Wingate, WA2EIU, to meet up and convoy together to Georgia's Clay National Guard Center. Mr. Gato towed the group's emergency communications trailer to the site. Working in two teams, the group set up the trailer and its antennas for HF, VHF, and UHF and weather, along with the MCOM generator and a do-it-yourself 40-meter folded dipole erected as an NVIS antenna in an inverted V configuration. Everything was in place and tested prior to the 8 a.m. start of StarTex. After E.C. Humphreys visited the Georgia National Guard Joint Operations Center inside the Guard's newly completed headquarters building, the COMEX began in earnest. The objectives for amateur radio included making contact with the Chatham County Aries Group deployed to Fort Stewart via HF voice and data, D-Star, and, if time allowed, Echolink. ICS-213-style messages were successfully passed via HF voice and PSK-31 and delivered to the intended recipients. Although the Fort Stewart team could hear the Cobb Aries group via D-Star Emergency Communications Reflector 30C, a programming glitch prevented them from replying. The Chatham hams solved the problem shortly before the exercise ended. Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Olive of the Headquarters Detachment at the Clay National Guard Center led the way for a series of VIP briefings given by Cobb Aries concerning the capabilities of amateur radio. The guardsmen all seemed to be impressed with the possibilities for interoperability, especially in the first 12 to 24 hours of any possible National Guard call-out, such as for Hurricane Sandy that had just hit the Northeast and Atlantic states. This citizen-soldier group has plenty of sophisticated communications gear, but they also understand that the Guard's mission often puts them in a position of needing to communicate and coordinate with civil authority and NGO support groups. Amateur radio already plays a key role in disaster scenarios with those groups. A little synchronicity may come into play, meaning it is a good thing to interact and practice interoperability. As the end of the exercise was being sounded, there were cries heard above the background noise of the generator. "Wait, I want to try." As usual, the time flew by, and all the communications exchanges ended with one last thing yet undone. The Cobb County Aries Group enjoyed lunch with the National Guard team, courtesy of Lieutenant Colonel Olive, and then packed it all up. Chatham County Aries was deployed to Fort Stewart, Georgia, near Savannah. Newly appointed Metro Atlanta Assistant DEC Guy McDonald, K4GTM, was there along with Greg Bandish, W5GKB, Dwight Bleicher, K4YPM, and Dan Scott, KF4MND. A special thanks goes to Sergeant First Class Tiffany Warren for her coordination efforts and arranging access to the Clay National Guard Center. Thanks to Lieutenant Colonel Olive and all the Guard crew for letting Cobb County Aries be part of their communications exercise. And our thanks go out to Cobb County, Georgia Emergency Coordinator Ed Humphreys, N5RCK, for this submission. We'll pause once again for a few seconds to allow repeaters to identify. This is the ARRL Aries Audio e-letter for November 21st, 2012. Tennessee Amateur Radio Club participates in Exercise Winter Storm 2012. Members of the Tennessee DeKalb and Cannon County Amateur Radio Club participated in an emergency exercise on Saturday, October 6, 2012. The simulated emergency test, or SET, was titled Winter Storm 2012 and was conducted with DeKalb and Cannon County EMAs. The exercise scenario was a winter storm that entered Tennessee from the west near Memphis and moved into Middle Tennessee west of Nashville by noon on Saturday. The storm shut down all major interstates and highways across the state, with major widespread power outages. Portable HF and VHF UHF stations and antenna systems were constructed, evaluated for performance, and deployed at several locations, including DeKalb West School, Woodland School, and atop Short Mountain. Stations at Cannon County High School, DeKalb Community Hospital, and Stones River Hospital were also activated and evaluated for effectiveness. The amateur radio station at the DeKalb County EOC, located at the Smithville Fire Hall, was the command center for the exercise. Messages were sent to the state EOC at the Tennessee Emergency Management Agency, or TEMA, in Nashville via wireless computer radio links. These messages contained SIT reps for DeKalb and Cannon counties and were sent from either the DeKalb EOC or the mobile station set up atop Short Mountain by HF radio to an automated station in another part of the U.S. outside the local simulated disaster area. Messages then went via one of 500 servers located worldwide and then into the regular Internet to be delivered via email anywhere that email is available. A total of 14 radio amateurs from throughout Middle Tennessee checked into the emergency radio network. Local amateur repeaters were used, as well as VHF, UHF, and HF point-to-point networks. Check-ins included ARRL Ares officials, DeKalb County EC Kathy Kajowski, NF9G, and Cannon County EC Freddie Curtis, KC4GUG. Additional stations checking into the radio network were John O'Connor, KD4WX, Ares District 6 Emergency Coordinator Dallas Reif, KK4ISW in Shelbyville, and Gary George, WB4CWS of McMinnville. The club thanked DeKalb County Emergency Management Director Charlie Parker and Cannon County EMA Director Faye Morse, as well as DeKalb Community Hospital and Stones River Hospital, for their support of local participation in this annual statewide exercise. QSL, and thanks to Freddie Curtis, KC4GUG, from the DeKalb Cannon County Amateur Radio Club in Smithville, Tennessee, for this report. New England Forest Rally 2012, challenging and rewarding. Tim Carter, W3ATB in Meredith, New Hampshire, wrote, "Using your radio to serve the public is not only a great way to give back, but it's also quite rewarding on a personal level. A secondary benefit to volunteering your time to perform public service through ham radio is that it is an excellent environment in which to hone your skills in case you're needed in an emergency. The protocols employed at a public service event are much like those used by hams called out to assist in disasters and emergencies. This past spring, I worked the Boston Marathon. Weeks ago, I was at the summit of Mount Washington in New Hampshire, braving sustained winds of 50 miles per hour while logging cyclists crossing the finish line of the grueling Newton's Revenge race. At the end of the second week of July 2012, thousands of people descended upon Newry, Maine for the classic New England Forest Rally, or NEFR. If you were anywhere near this remote western part of Maine, you saw street-legal racing cars, covered with decals, roaming Route 2 side by side with cars and trucks supporting amateur radio antennas and operators providing safety communications. The NEFR is an event that provides excellent training for disaster response operations. There are dense forests, hills, dust, heat, and no fixed repeaters nor commercial power. The team I was assigned to worked the prestigious Concord Pond stage on the first day of the rally, and both lost weekend stages on the second day of the event. The lost weekend stage is a loop road, raced counterclockwise in the morning and clockwise after lunch. For operators, a handy talkie was quite limited, unless it was paired with a mobile 50-watt radio that can cross-band repeat. I used my Yaesu VX7R on 439.00 MHz set on low power, and had my Yaesu FT8900R in my truck to capture my handy-talkie signal and boom it out at 50 watts on the primary simplex 2-meter frequency we were using. I was usually no more than 300 feet from my truck, so the low-power setting on my handy-talkie was perfect. This helped preserve battery power in the handy-talkie and allowed me to work all day on one battery. It's also helpful to have a portable mast-mounted antenna that you can connect to your car, truck, or nearby tree. If you like bugs, dust, mud, the woods, fast cars, food from plastic bags, and challenging work, then the New England Forest Rally is the place for you. In all seriousness, I highly recommend working this event, or any other rally event, if you want to see how you might perform under pressure in a real disaster. It's repeater identification time again, so we'll pause for a few seconds. This is the ARRL Aries Audio e-letter for November 21st, 2012. ARRL Public Service Emergency Communications Training Program changes. Revised field instructor and mentor qualifications and requirements have been implemented for the ARRL Public Service and Emergency Communications Training Program. Our continuing effort to improve and adjust our training program to adapt to the role we play in public service and emergency communications response with other local and national agencies results in changes from time to time. Based on feedback from individuals and leaders in our community and changes in FEMA training, we are making some changes to strengthen our training program. Effective November 1, 2012, we are updating the qualifications and requirements for those who wish to serve as field instructors or online mentors for the ARRL Emergency Communications Training Program. Changes to qualifications include the addition of Skywarn training and some changes in the list of FEMA training required of instructors and mentors. Updated requirements include listing field classes with the ARRL Continuing Education Program Office, or CEP, and filing student rosters and student evaluations with the CEP office. We are also adding a 3-year term of service to this appointment. You can review the updated qualifications requirements on the ARRL.org website. The list of prerequisites for completion of the Public Service and Emergency Communications Management for Radio Amateurs, the EC-016 course, has also been updated to reflect changes in the FEMA training program, as well as other appropriate training for field leadership. You may review the updated list of prerequisites in the course description at the ARRL.org website also. Thanks to Mike Corey, KI1U, the ARRL Emergency Preparedness Manager, and Deborah Johnson, K1DMJ, the ARRL Education Services Manager, for this information. Letters on Recruitment Challenges. Bill Neal, NE1LL, in Westerville, Ohio, writes, In response to the thoughtful letter in the last issue from John Lawrence, W1QS, about getting new operators into your organization, we can honestly say, in more than 20 years serving the Medtronic Twin Cities Marathon, we have never had a problem getting staffed up to around 130 volunteers for a 7-hour event. Here's what we do. 1. Run a big tent. We take anybody with a license, or even without a license, for certain jobs like checking in patients in our medical tent or looking up the status of missing runners. 2. Have an obsessive focus on the needs for healthcare support and safety in your event-served agency. 3. Take related duties as assigned and do them perfectly. Some of these, like driving medical carts, can be interesting. 4. Embrace the newest technology. This year, we were asked about supporting iPhones and sending text messages to family members of injured runners. 5. Follow ICS and NIMS best practices, including decentralizing operations. This provides us with more leadership opportunities. 6. Have a mission statement. Ours is to deploy world-class amateur radio infrastructure and highly trained volunteers to help make our community safer. 7. Show off a little. I will never forget the gratitude on the faces of the fledgling medical department at a new running event 3 years ago, who called us in to help. On a hot, steamy race morning, we brought in an incident action plan co-written with the city and county. 2 of the MDs from that event now volunteer for us. And 8, work seamlessly with public safety professionals and under their direction. Led by our energetic medical director, we have been recruiting new healthcare volunteers and are helping to glue our various agencies together to improve the overall level of emergency response. Thanks to Eric Westgaard, NY9D, the Volunteer Medical Communications Coordinator, Twin Cities in Motion, for these suggestions. Mr. Neal continues, "I feel the pain of John Lawrence, W1QS. As the leader of a successful VE team, we have developed a comprehensive means to meet our recruitment goals. A good PIO or PR person is a must. You need a strong person or team to get your message out, as well as manage your message. We actively go after CERT volunteers, public safety officials, Boy Scouts, Civil Air Patrol, library patrons, pilots, boaters, senior center residents, and so on, to get interested people licensed and ultimately on our team. Use some imagination. Look especially at your served agencies as a potential recruiting pool. Going after them also promotes communication, cooperation, and coordination. Bring people together by generating training and activities, as well as social events, networking, and getting people to work together as a team. People will be involved if they feel engaged and that they can contribute." We'll pause now for a few seconds to allow repeaters to identify. This is the ARRL Aries Audio E-Letter for November 21st, 2012. Florida Aries Group supports Great Floridian Triathlon. The Lake County, Florida Aries took an active support role in the Great Floridian Triathlon that was held on October 20, 2012 in Claremont, Florida. The major contest is the Ironman, where athletes complete a 2.5-mile swim, a 112-mile bicycle ride, and a 26-mile marathon run. There were 300 people who took part in the Ironman event, and another 100 who competed in an intermediate contest. Lake County Aries, or LC Aries, provided radio communications along the 112-mile bicycle route, consisting of 3 laps of nearly equal mileage. LC Aries was there to make sure the ride was safe, and those riders who broke down or had a medical problem could get help quickly. Several Aries volunteers had put in a 12-hour day. LC Aries turned out 13 volunteers to provide the necessary radio communications using their own radio equipment and vehicles, as well as the Aries mobile communications trailer. The trailer was set up at the Lake Mineola Park site in Claremont, next to the event headquarters. A VHF-UHF vertical antenna was placed on top of the 40-foot crank-up tower, which served very well. The N4 FLA repeater was the primary frequency. Simplex 2-meter frequencies were also used for short-range contact. The Lake County EMS provided Aries with one of their portable radios for use in the trailer to report cases that needed medical attention. We had to use this radio on 3 occasions when amateur radio mobiles reported medical emergencies. We also had Nextel communications with event personnel and with the mobile bicycle repair vans, who also provided the SAG wagons. Lessons learned. Everything was going smoothly until our primary repeater locked up and made it unusable. Being flexible ham radio operators, we quickly switched to our secondary repeater without missing a beat. Taking part in events such as this gives the Aries personnel practical experience in setting up emergency radio equipment, how to function as a team in an emergency, and to properly communicate by radio under these circumstances. This is important, as we are sometimes called upon to support public safety first responders in times of natural disasters, such as hurricanes and tornadoes, which are not strangers to this part of Florida. Thanks to Ted Lubers, K1AYZ, the Lake County Aries PIO in Tavares, Florida, for this information. K1CE for a final. Rick Palm says, "Here's what I took away from reading and compiling the reports received after the disaster responses were wrapped up from Storm Sandy. Aries and amateur radio emergency disaster response communications have evolved exceptionally well in this post-9/11 and Katrina era. Aries has kept pace step for step with the emergency management community at large, as we have embraced digital modes, new technology, and especially more and better training, professionalism, and maturity as a critical component of the overall radio communications emergency support function. We should be proud of our efforts that have produced a better, more valuable service for our neighbors and communities, our served agencies, and indeed our own amateur radio community." And that's the ARRL Aries Audio E-Letter for November 21st, 2012. The ARRL Aries Audio E-Letter is a monthly service of the American Radio Relay League, ARRL, the National Organization for Amateur Radio. The Aries Audio E-Letter is a voice version of the ARRL Aries E-Letter, compiled and written by Rick Palm, K1CE. To learn more about amateur radio, or to get the latest in amateur radio news, visit ARRL.org on the World Wide Web. Our thanks to this month's contributors. My script editor is Al Brown, KZ3AB in Laurel, Maryland. Thanks for listening, and 73. I'm Tony Riggs, W1FHN, reporting from Lanham, Maryland. Copyright 2012 ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio. All rights reserved.